Welcome to Stories from the Park, a Heritage Park podcast.
Hi, I'm Dominic Terry, Communications Manager.
And I'm Kasiah Quill, Chief Curator at Heritage Park.
We are located on Treaty 7 land in Calgary, Alberta, a place where visitors come to learn about the history of all those who have gathered here, and where Indigenous people proudly share cultural traditions and tell stories about their rich heritage, history, and attachment to the land.
In this episode, we focus on the little-known history of queer people in Calgary, who they were, how they lived, their lives, and the consequences for just being who they were.
We're speaking with Kevin Allen, author of Our Past Matters, Stories of Gay Calgary, and the driving force behind the Calgary Gay History Project. And just a warning, this episode may contain mature subject matter.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you so much for being here today to chat with us a little bit about the queer history of Calgary.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah,
it's something that we don't talk about a lot at the park, but as we've spoke about before on our podcast, it's history adjacent. You know, we knew that there are people, queer people who lived in Calgary, over the last, hundreds of years, however long people are here, there have been queer people here. So, it's really interesting to jump into it. So I guess to start, Kevin, how hard is it to kind of dig up these stories, especially as you get farther back in history?
Yeah.
Kind of what are the challenges surrounding that?
Well, for most of the 20th century, we were a very marginalized community. So our stories weren't kept in archives and libraries and institutions, probably like Heritage Park. So when I started the project in 2012, it was a lot of oral history, talking to, anyone that was queer that had gray hair. And people, in that generation don't even like the word queer. But then going back even farther into like early settler Calgary, I mean, there's no lived experiences anymore. And so you have to really kind of squint through the historical record to kind of see evidence of the queers who came before us. But there is some, because it was a criminalized sort of act. So it's sort of one of the major sources is, court cases and things like that of people who, ran afoul of the law because of how they're, who they were loving.
Right. That is a challenging kind of space to explore. So we know a lot that early Euro-Canadian experiences of Western Canada have really heavily male demographics. And I know that a lot of people just think and assume that there weren't kind of sexual relationships or romantic relationships between these men. But we know that that's not at all accurate. Do you want to explain a little bit about that kind of culture and that experience of...
I need to kind of back up and talk about how homosexuality is sort of a modern, like as a gay identity, is a kind of a modern concept that really started to come in around in the 1940s. Men had sex with men and women had sex with women sort of in passing without this sort of sense of it defining their personhood. So it's also challenging to research, because it was different. And so you're right. There's lots of research that talks about sort of settler towns on the borders being very homosocial environments and like very male dominated. And if you look in Calgary's sort of settler historical record, that first decade in the 20th century, I think I've read Calgary Herald articles that said it was 75% male. So a lot of men are going home in the cold, if they're not sort of bunking with their friends. And there was a lot of sort of homosocial spaces like boarding houses, pool halls, that kind of thing. The first Alberta hotel was considered a male mecca, a place where men could socialize with each other and have these sort of very intense friendships, which maybe, verged on the romantic. So it was a very blurry sort of situation for men who were, seeking companionship and comfort with other men. And then there's also the fact of Southern Alberta had a lot of the British remittance men. So these were, usually peers or sort of high status UK individuals who were sort of notorious in their families, and they were sent away to the colonies to kind of, keep their family reputations back home intact. So the black sheep of the family, and they're called remittance men because they got this monthly allowance to stay. And a lot of them took up ranching in southern Alberta, and they'd come into Calgary once a month to pick up their remittance checks and have big parties and stuff like that. And one of the reasons that you were a remittance man was because you had these inappropriate sexual relationships with other men. So there was a lot of them here, and they did interesting things. They started polo clubs, and there hasn't been a lot of work about sort of their relationships, but I'm sure that there was sort of a definite queer vibe in some places in early
Oh,
Calgary's
that's
history.
fascinating. That is absolutely fascinating.
Would those remittance men, would they be, for lack of a better word, sort of flamboyant about it, or would these relationships still be on the down low because of the kind of, the heteronormal idea of society at the time?
Yeah, so I would so you got into trouble based on your gender presentation. So if you were a effeminate man, that's when you start to kind of get noticed by sort of the crown or by the state. But there were a lot of men who could kind of pass, and then no one ever questioned their behavior. Another thing that is notable in the historical record is sort of upper class men rarely got into trouble compared to like lower class or lower ed less educated men. So there were ways of kind of I think the state kind of turned a blind eye to certain groups of people, and I would think the remittance men, because they had money in sort of early settler Calgary, had a lot of privilege and a lot of opportunities to do what they wanted. I mean, the Ranchmen's Club, which is still around in Calgary, started from a lot of these, that sort of culture of people coming into Calgary, on a monthly basis to pick up their checks, and the Ranchmen's Club actually had houses, like they had sort of bedrooms for people that, were just stopping in from spending a weekend in Calgary and stuff like that. So, and then coincidentally, or maybe not, the Ranchmen's Club where it is now on 13th Avenue, that was the site of the sort of gay prostitution stroll for decades and decades, so there's this kind of like through line from early settler Calgary to late 20th century
Their
culture.
influence probably would have played a lot on it too, right? If they were landowners and fairly well off or well to do, that influence thing would have probably turned a blind eye to it as well.
And I think these were like real bon vivants, right? They had a kind of independent allowance, and they spent it. And so they were there's lots of stuff in the historical record about the crazy parties and the like overconsumption of whatever, and they were living life pretty large. So
They just came and continued doing their life the way they had been doing it
yeah,
in England.
exactly.
Just doing it all over here too. So we talked a little bit at the beginning. You're discussing the policing of this and the kind of looking in the records and that kind of play crime records. So what kind of consequences are people facing if they are caught in relationships or situations that are considered not okay?
Yeah, so again, policing was very sort of arbitrary, like who got caught and who didn't. Often there was a disgruntled family member, often a father of some young man who, was sort of protecting the reputation of his family and bringing these horses, these cases to court. But the consequences could be severe. We inherited the UK's common law system, and homosexuality was punished under gross indecency, which is sort of an umbrella term that's very subjective and open to whatever the magistrates decided was going to happen. And Canada increased the maximum penalty from 2 years in prison to five, with the addition of the lash as being an optional punishment. You know, I think in the 1890s, I don't remember the year, but there were people who, you know, were charged with gross indecency who ended up spending time in jail, and or the lash right up. The lash, less so in later history, but right up until the late 60s in Canada. So, gross indecency wasn't modified until 1969 in the criminal code. So, yeah, there's people who confessed to unwisely having had some same-sex relations, and they go to jail. It's basically the nub of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot in common with just policing in general, that certain people, depending on your status, are not really facing consequences, or different people at lower classes being policed more heavily. So I think that's a common thread with a lot of society, which
Yeah,
is kind of
exactly.
interesting. Yeah.
What about
Yeah,
that?
so the
You talked about the around the Ranchman's Club and 13th Avenue being that prostitution stroll. I guess that this is not necessarily in the queer context, but how was that policed? Was it policed in the same way at that time?
I don't know much about the historic policing of gay prostitution, but sort of in the 20th century context, it was sort of difficult to police right up until like the Calgary police was working with the gay community to try and move the stroll in the 80s unsuccessfully. And there was a lot of sort of complaints from people who lived in the area that it was, you know, something they didn't want in their backyard and they wanted to eradicate it. But it was one of those things that have been with society for a long time, and you know there's a market for it, and it was hard to police. So that's a good question about early sort of early Calgary history, what how that all shook down, or what it looked like, or how it was regulated.
Jumping back to our time period that the kind of the park represents there, we know that, you've found some specific stories through your research of kind of pre-World War II, early settlement times. What are some of those interesting stories that you can kind of share with us of what you found in those times?
Yeah, there's another queer historian, Jarrett Henderson, who did some research on a court case in the turn of the 20th century. There was a lawyer in Calgary named James Smith, who he's actually one of the founders of the Calgary Bar in 1890. He was in his 40s. He started having an affair with a 16-year-old man named Walter McHugh. McHugh House is a famous McHugh. The McHugh family were a famous sort of local family. And in the court records, it was consensual. Like Walter, who's the young man, you know, talks about it was something he chose to do. And there was, you know, a criminal case around charging the older lawyer with gross indecency. And it was eventually he pled not guilty and like kept quiet in the you know just he was normally a very voluble lawyer, but you know in his case he said it's just not true, not true, not true, and eventually the case was thrown out, which shows that kind of like high status professional people can somehow slide through. But that court case was really interesting because in the record it you know it went into some detail about, you know, their sex acts and the fact that it had this consent sort of thing attached to it. The McHugh family didn't get sort of or the father didn't get the sense of punishment that he wanted. But it's interesting that, you know, right, I think it was 1900, or sorry, 1900 that this court case happened, that sort of early Calgary, his Calgary wasn't very large, that there's these kind of stories being sort of, I guess, debated by society through the, you know, the crown and the local magistrates. One of the most famous and interesting stories that I have found was like pre-Calgary, pre-settler Calgary, there was a French Canadian want to be priest named Jean Leroux, who was born in sort of the Montreal area in 1830. He was kicked out of seminary school in Quebec for having been found in bed with another male seminary student. He came out to the territories. We weren't Alberta then, and ended up in St. Albert at the missionary there with the mission there, and got kicked out again. And because he had this very sort of volatile, fractious relationship with the Catholic Church and the Catholic missionaries, he ended up finding comfort and alignment and friendship with the Siksika, the Blackfoot, in the territories. And he became the most fluent Blackfoot speaker in the territories, and sort of became a part of Blackfoot culture. Like, he lived with the Siksika and became close personal friends with Chief Crowfoot. He wrote the first Blackfoot English dictionary for the traders in Fort Calgary, and sort of mapped the region. And when Treaty 7 was getting signed in 1877, the lieutenant governor David Laird wanted Jean Leroux to translate on behalf of the crown, and he refused. He said, I'm translating on behalf of the Indian chiefs who are, my friends." And he did. And so when Treaty 7 was here for Canada 150 at Fort Calgary, like, you could see Jean Leroux's signature on the document, and the reason he sort of rejected settler culture was because the Blackfoot or the Siksika had space for different sexual orientations and gender identities in, their sort of pre-colonial culture. And so the settlers coming in brought their sort of, I guess, Christian mores with them that didn't have a lot of space for people who fit outside a certain box. So that's a super interesting. So right at the founding of sort of Calgary's proto history is this, gay history story.
That's amazing. I think that you can kind of see connections between that kind of story and a larger span of Western history of just it being a space that offers some people opportunity to be themselves for this period just before all the crazy, crazy amount of settlement and new rules and society are coming in, that there's some opportunity for people to come and find acceptance.
Yeah, and live kind of outside of, the
The
norm.
normal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
It's
there's
really
more
cool.
space maybe in early settler Calgary history to be like that.
But especially with the indigenous peoples as well, who always believed in a two-spirit, whatever, label that white people may want to put on it, whether it's queer or at whatever, is that was a normal, deemed to be a normal way of living for indigenous people.
The Siksika also had, so every First Nation is different with respect to their queer history. So, but the Siksika also had a category. They had different genders, but there's one, I don't remember the Blackfoot name, but the manly hearted woman. And they had a famous chief who was, Two Spirit, who she took a wife, and she, participated, like, and she's famous sort of, as a hero in their history and in their culture. And so, Two Spirit history is also sort of an underexplored sort of research area for historians.
That's great. There's been lots of things you've touched on. Even just you can see connections to the park. We've talked about in our ranch house the polo matches, and we talk a little bit about our women's men. And I don't think we've ever considered or explored the idea of kind of homosocial relationships and what these men were really up to. We talk about, oh, they're like kind of fancy rich guys that come out here and just mess around, but like, what are they doing? We haven't really talked about that. So that's actually really exciting because you've given me some thoughts on things that we could potentially explore together in our space.
Well, queers often, sort of are hiding in plain sight sort of thing, because most people have this kind of like, in a non-pejorative way, heterosexist view of the world. Like they just, default to like that guy, that's a guy, that's a girl. They must be, attracted to each other or whatever, and make all these assumptions without ever considering, that there could be other possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of hard to see because of the way we've recorded it.
Exactly.
Yeah, no kidding.
Especially because of how we recorded it. Yeah, and who recorded it.
And who recorded it? Yeah, that's an excellent point. Well, I think Kevin, that covers pretty well what we wanted to ask you about. Is there anything else? Any other interesting things that you wanted to bring up that's in your research that you think that lends itself to this conversation?
No, I think I'm really delighted that you're interested in exploring these history adjacent sort of subjects, and maybe it's not even that adjacent. Like maybe it's actually, a core part of the story that just hasn't been explored and needs more research. So thank you for your interest in queer history.
Where, if we were wanting to find out more about Calgary's gay history, where can we find some more information?
Well, you can go to our website, calgarygayhistory.ca, which kind of collects all our historic findings in sort of small snippets, blog posts. I wrote a book called Our Past Matter, Stories of Gay Calgary, which you can get at independent bookstores or at the Calgary Public Library. We're always looking for more people who are interested in doing this research. It's all sort of a volunteer collective that works on this. So anyone who's interested and who wants to do research or has stories to share is welcome to contact us through the website.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.